From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, the Senate considers destroying the institution of marriage, good news for Christian adoption agencies, and a dangerous trend for the world's youth. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. I want to start off this weekend show with a reminder that this coming week, starting on Wednesday, we'll be hosting our annual Pray, Vote, Stand Summit at First Baptist Church, Atlanta. You can find out more when you visit tonyperkins.com and scroll down to the Pray, Vote, Stand for Life tile. I hope to see you there. On Wednesday of this week, Washington Watch host Tony Perkins was back in the chair and was joined in his first segment by Senator Kevin Cramer of North Dakota. They talked about the Senate's efforts to codify the court's redefinition of marriage to include same-sex couples. Here's how Tony got the segment started.
Senator Cramer, welcome back to the program.
It's always good to be with you. Thanks, Tony.
Well, welcome back to the city. As we heard earlier, a lot of things that are concerning to Americans, inflation, rising crime rates, chaos at the border, but that doesn't seem to be at the top of the Democrats' agenda.
Well, it sure isn't. And I mean, when you consider the speech that President Biden delivered in what looked to me like a Batman movie set, it seems to be all about Donald Trump, which I find absolutely amusing in some respects, that the current president is more, sort of motivated by the previous president than he is by the effects of his own presidency. And I find it to be insecure. I find it to be a bit desperate, quite honestly, that he would choose to attack his predecessor and the people who support his predecessor, while not talking about any of the things that people are talking to me about back home in North Dakota, the issues that you've raised with inflation and crime especially.
Senator, I don't know, is it just me, but even today when Senator Schumer went to the floor talking about President Trump calling people names, being ugly, and you just heard the clip from President Biden accusing half of America of being MAGA Republicans and being against the Constitution, against the rule of law. To me, it sounds an awful lot like the Democrats are trying to cover their trails and they're projecting onto Republicans what they've been doing for the last dozen years.
Well, it's hard to miss the irony in it, isn't it? I mean, Joe Biden talking about Republicans as though we're not for the rule of law when he's the head of the party that has been all about defunding the police, encouraging riots in the streets. I mean, Chuck Schumer himself encouraging, at least threatening Supreme Court justices by name with physical harm. Really quite ironic. But what I see in all of this, I mentioned a little bit ago, a sense of desperation as well as insecurity. I think Democrats are feeling very desperate because their own base is not reliable right now. Their own base is dissatisfied. And it seems to me that their rhetoric is trying to shore up their own base, never mind, the independent voters, the middle ground voters, if you will, that are looking for real solutions, substantive solutions.
Senator Cramer, let's talk a little bit about what is at the top of their agenda. One of those is what they call the Respect for Marriage Act, a very poorly named. It should be named the Disrespect for Marriage Act. This will only accelerate, as I mentioned a few moments ago, the threats to religious freedom in this country. What are you hearing about this bill? What are you hearing from your colleagues? What are the prospects?
Well, I think, first of all, what I'm hearing from North Dakotans, which matters the most to me, is overwhelmingly they oppose this legislation. So people are reading it, they're hearing about it, and they see it for what it is. What I hear from my colleagues, there's certainly a few, and we know generally who they are. By my colleagues, I mean Republican colleagues, who just want to get this thing behind us, and the faster we can do that, the better. And the best way to do that is to simply give them the votes they need to pass the bill. That would be a terrible mistake. I don't believe there are 10 Republicans that will fall for that. Because what we're hearing from people, and you've touched on it, in addition to, or maybe even separate from, the definition of marriage itself and how it's codified, is the potential attack on religious liberties once a bill like this would pass. Because in many respects, passing a bill like this really sends a pretty strong message that religious beliefs don't matter. And this would have such overwhelming ramifications for obviously churches, but also those faith-based organizations that create schools and build hospitals and orphanages and feed hungry people and all of the things that faith and the compassion that comes from faith do on behalf of our society. And they do it in a way that's compassionate, unlike the federal government. And I think, Tony, this is as much about religious liberty as it is about marriage and recognizing another state's definition of marriage.
Senator, I think you're absolutely correct. You know, because we've seen in the 7 years since the court redefined marriage, we've seen this acceleration of hostility, oftentimes at the hands of government. We're going to be talking in our next segment with an ADF attorney who represented an adoption agency, a faith-based adoption agency that receives no government money, but was being they were being targeted by the state of New York simply because they wanted to place children with married couples, married men and women. Moms and dads, and that was because of their faith. Is that message about this threat to religious freedom getting through to your colleagues?
So, Tony, I think it is getting through, and you teed it up very nicely when you said, fortunately, the August recess came along in time for us to go home and hear from our constituents, hear from our priests and our pastors and the praying men and women of our churches, the people that start these types of ministries that are so compassionate and provide a service that's so important. And by the way, remember, if you didn't have faith-based organizations doing all of these things, the alternative is the government. And that's really what liberals want. They want the government to replace the church, to replace the body of Christ, to replace compassionate, faith-based services. And I don't want that. Really, in many respects, Tony, and I don't like to be too hard on the church, but I think for a long time we took our eye off the ball. We even sort of liked the idea that the government would feed hungry people, that they would clothe the poor, that they would visit the sick. And I always like to tell my colleagues that the Sermon on the Mount wasn't delivered to the democracy or to the Congress. It was delivered to the disciples and the church and the congregation. And I don't want us to lose neither that responsibility or that obligation as faithful people. And we have to fight back on this.
Well said. And in fact, we're going to talk about that more, why the church is kind of, I think, drifting from that understanding of that responsibility. Senator Kramer, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today. And welcome back to town.
Always my pleasure. Thank you, Tony.
All right. Senator Kramer of North Dakota. All right. We're going to talk next about the very present and real danger to religious freedom, a case out of New York, as I was just mentioning. We're going to talk with the Alliance Defending Freedom, who represented this adoption agency successfully. But the threat continues, and we don't need to accelerate it by passing bad legislation. So you need to speak to your senators before they vote on this Disrespect for Marriage Act. Don't go away. More Washington Watch straight ahead. Hello, this is Tony Perkins inviting you to join me and other like-minded believers in Atlanta, Georgia, September the 14th through the 16th for Family Research Council and FRC Action's Pray, Vote, Stand Summit. This year, our theme is Pray, Vote, Stand for Life. Be equipped and encouraged to stand boldly for faith, family, and freedom in the public square and address the most controversial issues in our culture from a biblical worldview. Issues like protecting the unborn post-Roe, religious freedom, gender identity, parental rights, educational indoctrination, the importance of the nuclear family, and much more. You'll hear from Sam Brownback, Dr. Ben Carson, Jensen Franklin, Mike Huckabee, Dr. Al Mohler, Ali Beth Stuckey, and many others. Pray, vote, and stand with us at First Baptist Atlanta from September the 14th through the 16th. Register online at prayvotestand.org/summit or call 877-372-2808.
Today it can be a challenge finding a quality news source in this media-saturated world, which is why Family Research Council launched The Washington Stand, an online platform with a mission to provide readers with factual news and commentary, all from a biblical worldview. Based in Washington, D.C., our reporters provide accurate and up-to-date information on the biggest stories of the day, ranging from breaking news on crucial Supreme Court cases to the latest stories in public education, details on domestic and international religious liberty reports, and more. The Washington Stand was created to keep you informed on the stories affecting faith, family, and freedom. We realize that trust and credibility must be earned, and we're committed to earning yours. We don't take it for granted that you're giving us your time to read what we write. It's our prayer that what we publish here will help equip you as you stand where you are. It is time to be encouraged, to be in the know, and stand firm in truth. Do so by visiting WashingtonStand.com today.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Good to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. An example of the threat to religious freedom that the redefinition of marriage has created has been front and center in the state of New York, where the state attempted to shut down a faith-based adoption provider. Well, in this case, some good news. A federal district court issued an order just today to permanently prevent the state of New York from targeting this agency simply because of its religious beliefs. This is what the adoption agency wanted to do: place children with married moms and dads based upon what the Bible teaches. The New York State Office of Children and Family Services had singled out New Hope Family Services for its policy. The nonprofit agency was consistently praised by the state for its stellar performance, but it was given the ultimatum of changing its policies or being shut down. Joining me now to discuss this is Jake Warner, Senior Counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom, which represented New Hope Family Services in this case. Jake, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on the show today.
Hey, congratulations on yet another victory. Walk us through any of the details that I missed in this case.
Well, it was a big win today in court for New Hope Family Services. They are a religious adoption provider, and they've been around since 1965. They've given over 1,000 kids a loving home. And a few years ago, they were targeted by the state of New York over their policy to place children in the homes of loving moms and dads and to refer others out when they were asked to do otherwise. And for exercising their faith this way, the state of New York tried to punish them. They tried to shut them down, eliminating their ability to provide loving homes for kids.
Now, a couple of, I think, very important points to make in this with New Hope is the fact that they were a private religious organization that did not receive any government money. They were all supported. They were supported solely by donations and a fee that adoptive parents would pay to them. So what was the justification of the state coming in to shut them down?
Well, the state disagreed with their religious beliefs shortly after New Hope received this letter telling them that they had to either shut down or abandon their beliefs. Many of the approved religious adoption centers in the state of New York disappeared from the state's websites of approved providers. So what this shows is that the state was targeting religious providers like New Hope Family Services. So in response to this religious targeting, ADF filed a lawsuit on behalf of New Hope Family Services, and thankfully today the court ruled that the state couldn't target New Hope Family Services this way or compel their speech, compel them to affirm a view of marriage or of what's best for the family that's inconsistent with their faith.
So, Jake, what implications will this have for other faith-based organizations operating in the state of New York?
Well, this decision should give hope to any religious adoption provider in New York that they should be allowed to live and work, place children consistently with their religious beliefs without being targeted or punished by the government. And this builds on a case that the U.S. Supreme Court recently decided in Philadelphia. You might remember the Fulton case, right, where the U.S. Supreme Court said that the city of Philadelphia couldn't interfere with the religious decisions of an adoption provider in that case. So we hope that this decision, this permanent injunction stopping New York from targeting religious adoption providers, will give other adoption providers in the state good hope that their constitutional rights will not be infringed.
So Jake, is this kind of the new norm for Christian organizations that... We're talking right now of adoption, but it could be another service that they provide. But simply because they hold to biblical views of human sexuality and marriage, they're being targeted not by left-wing organizations. We expect that. But this is coming from their own government that in many cases benefit from the benevolent services that these organizations provide.
Increasingly, we're seeing states misuse their public accommodation laws to target religious organizations and even businesses. You probably know about the cases of cake artist Jack Phillips. And then ADF also has another case before the U.S. Supreme Court right now, 303 Creative, involving website designer. In those cases, the state of Colorado were threatening artists with punishment if they wanted to live consistently with their faith, if they wanted to create artwork consistently with their religious beliefs about marriage and gender. So what we've seen across the country, not just in New York and not just in Colorado, is government officials and activists increasingly misusing the law to target people they disagree with. But the First Amendment protects against this kind of overreach. It protects the expressive and religious decisions of these organizations.
Now, in many cases, they win, but it's very costly, time-consuming, emotionally draining to have to go through all of this to see your day in court. And of course, Jack Phillips, every time he wins, he's drugged back into the court. So this is clearly collusion on the side of the left with many allies in government to do this. But let me ask you this question, Jake. Do you expect to see more of these type cases if the Congress were to codify the Supreme Court redefinition of marriage from Obergefell into federal statute?
I think we could see governments using such laws to target Christian business owners, not only in states like Colorado and New York, but all around the country at that point. But thankfully, courts are starting to recognize that this kind of interference is unconstitutional. It violates the First Amendment. They can't do that. So no matter what happens in Congress, I think we have reason to hope that the courts are going to protect the religious freedom of businesses and organizations around the country.
Well, we're certainly grateful for the tremendous work that Alliance Defending Freedom does, along with many of our other allies in the public sphere of legal protection. So, Jake, I want to thank you for joining us today, and congratulations on this victory.
Thanks again, and thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Always glad to have you guys on. You know, part of this strategy, as Jake made reference to, is intimidation. If they can intimidate others by targeting one agency, because a lot of people are not going to have the courage nor the stamina to go through a very public legal battle. And of course, you don't see the backside of this, where the left targets many of these people, the hostile, hateful, vile emails and messages and packages dropped off at their homes. Folks, we have to stand for religious freedom. And I want to encourage you again to contact your senators and encourage them not to vote for the Disrespect for Marriage Act, and to stand for religious freedom. And the other thing we have to do is we have to use our freedom to protect our freedom. We will not give up these fundamental freedoms without a fight. And I believe if we fight, we'll be successful. All right, don't go away. More Washington Watch on the other side of this break.
From Asia to Africa, from the Middle East to Europe and beyond, the global persecution of Christians becomes more ominous with every passing year. Heroic Faith serves as a tribute to the courageous believers who face grave and often deadly threats, yet bravely persevere in their devotion to Jesus Christ. The book highlights personal stories from those who endure religious persecution and takes a close look at the tragic circumstances Christians often face due to dangerous and deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold, or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith.
Hi, I'm Joseph Backholm. I'm a senior fellow at FRC, and I'm inviting high school and college students to join me for a special free worldview event on Friday, September 16th from 4 to 7 p.m. during our Pray Vote Stand Summit at First Baptist Church in Atlanta. I'll do an introduction to worldview and help you understand why people disagree so passionately. Then, in our 90-minute Ask Anything session, you can do just that. Ask anything about the best way to apply God's truth to the world around us. We know racism is wrong. Why shouldn't we support critical race theory? Is it true that love is love? Do intersex people prove there are more than two genders? Or maybe you just want to talk about the dangers of Christian nationalism. Whatever your questions, we want to talk about it. Register for free online at prayvotestand.org/summit or by calling 877-372-2808. You might have fun, but I guarantee you'll learn something. We'll see you there.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And remember, you can register for a free family pass to the Pray Vote Stand Summit. We're going to have a drawing on Friday. Text the word summit to 67742. That's the word summit to 67742, and you will be registered for that family pass, to win a free family pass. The World Professional Association for Transgender Health, WPATH, will soon release its Standards of Care Version 8, which is expected to lower its age recommendations for children to receive gender surgeries. Specifically, it would lower the age of breast removal to 15 years old and bottom surgery, including womb and testicle removal, to 17 years of age. Now, this is a year earlier than the previous guidance. Now, WPATH is expected to release these updated guidance next week, and children's hospitals nationwide will be under the microscope as they decide whether or not they march in lockstep with this organization's guidance, as too many have in the past. Now, is this being driven by science, or is it being driven by politics? Joining me now to discuss this, Dr. Jennifer Ballins, director of the Center for Family Studies here at the Family Research Council. Jennifer has extensive clinical and research experience working with survivors of trauma and abuse and has also taught on psychological trauma and research methods in several graduate programs across the nation. Dr. Ballins, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right, so tell us more about this organization, the World Professional Association for Transgender Health. What type of organization is it? How much influence do they have with medical providers?
Unfortunately, they have a lot of influence with medical providers. So basically, they are an organization, an activist organization, that at least their stated goal is that they promote evidence-based care for transgender people. It's really an activist organization under the guise of pseudoscience. And I never thought I'd use my research teaching skills to extend to this realm, because I always believed in science, loved science. But when I look at the work that's produced by this organization, it is anything but science. It's very, very poor quality. And there are a few things that I think are important for our audience to know. And one is, just because somebody says evidence-based practice does not mean it's good. We're going to hear that a lot, especially with this particular administration, because they're promoting such radical ideas that have no basis in science.
I don't track this extremely close. I mean, I watch it because obviously it's a growing issue here in the United States. But if I'm not mistaken, we're seeing other countries that are actually saying, whoa, 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 wait a minute. We got to push the pause button, moving too fast. A lot of problems associated with the surgical procedures being conducted on minors. It appears that America is kind of an outlier here. We're going the opposite direction.
Yeah, you see other countries that they are actually looking at the science, and they see that it's such poor quality that, and they're getting backlash, right? So it's not only the science, because, you know, you can kind of wave your hand and pretend that it doesn't exist. You can sort of talk over people that maybe don't know the nuances of it and try to make it sound good. But the reality is these, particularly youth, are experiencing very painful repercussions from these procedures. So it's a combination of the science and these unfortunate experiences that we're observing with these young people. And they're coming out and saying, this was harmful. I was not given full informed consent. I didn't really know what I was signing up for when I was sold this bill of goods. So yes, you see lots of European nations backing away from these practices because, you know, they're going to get sued.
Right. So Dr. Bowens, we see them moving this lower in age, and I can only expect that we'll see them trying to push it even lower. But when you look at the cognitive ability of young people, the emotional development, we actually should probably be pushing it out further when you consider when someone is actually fully developed mentally.
Yes, absolutely. And common sense tells us this. All we have to do is look at any teenager and some of the risky behaviors that they engage in. And that's primarily because their prefrontal cortex is not developed. So, and we think about our own lives. What were some of the stupid things that we did growing up that we said, oh gosh, I wish, had I known now, I would have never done that XYZ. And certainly these young people are offered life-changing quote-unquote interventions just to go back to my point about evidence-based practice, evidence-based just means whatever's available. So Tony, that means I can develop some intervention and then, you know, maybe have a few web surveys and invite a few people to comment on that. And as we come to a consensus and say, this is the best practice for, I don't know, helping someone get off coffee or something. Don't right. send that my way. But that, then we say it's evidence-based. And that's what these folks are doing. And it's to the detriment of young people.
So, Jennifer, up against a break, but the science doesn't back the lowering of this age.
Absolutely not. And again, common sense tells us that too. Okay. So we'd really have to have great evidence to say otherwise to go against our what we know in everyday yeah. life.
Jennifer, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. A reminder that you can find additional news and commentary over at WashingtonStand.com. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.